Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Program, where we reignite your passion, your purpose, and your play. Find us at www.hotpinkyou.com. Take it away, ladies.
Thank you and welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Life Class. I'm Christy Bemis, and I'm really glad that you're here today. Today's show is all about talking about toxic people in our lives, and I have over 10 plus different characteristics, and I'm going to talk about them as labels today, but I hate doing that, and I'll tell you why as we move through our show. And I'm also going to walk you through a couple different processes and tools that you can use in communication. Sometimes toxic people in our lives are our closest relationships, our best friends, our partners and our lovers, our children, and our coworkers. And so today's show is not about cutting these people out of your life. It's about calling them into your life in new and better ways. And we will also cover how do you make a decision to cut somebody out of your life. Welcome. Sit back and enjoy our show today and grab a journal and a pen and let's dive in. Today's show is all about toxic people. I'm Christy Bemis. I'm an author, speaker, psychotherapist, and I like to call myself an Ignite Your Life coach. Hot Pink University is a place where women can learn how to reignite their passions, their purpose, and their play. And I like to say living authentic as fuck lives. I recently launched this series of life classes, and you can also find me on my YouTube, Authentic AF Television, where you can find all kinds of speakers and guests talking about how to live life more authentically. If you want to locate any of these services and supports, you can find me at www.hotpinkyou.com. Or you can find me on Facebook at Hot Pink University with Christy Bemis. There's always ways to be re-inspired in your life, to reignite your life with passion, with purpose, and play. And today is all about talking about toxic people because we live in a world with humans, and humans act like humans. And how can we find tools to navigate people's humanness? So I'm going to be talking a lot about different labels, and I wanted to start with, I really hate labels. As a psychotherapist, I need to operate and function in a world with a lot of labels. I hate labels when they're put on me. I hate labels when, like, I'm arguing with a loved one and they say something about my character that's a label, you know, whatever that might be for you. And I've talked a little bit about in previous episodes the labels of too sensitive and too dramatic. And so I've talked a lot about labels throughout my life. I operate as a psychotherapist in the realm of labels because I'm forced as like an insurance provider on different insurance boards to put a label on somebody based on a set of symptoms that I'm seeing in them, to take a thorough social history and then be able to spit out some kind of label about who they are. Are they anxious? Do they have generalized anxiety disorder? Are they depressed? If they're depressed, what kind of depression? And I don't like functioning a great deal in labels because basically I think people have needs. And people's behaviors, generally speaking, are a function or adaptation to getting their needs met. Sometimes people's behaviors and how they get needs met aren't really productive, and they are actually pretty destructive to relationships. And so I want you to take the labels that I have with people in this toxic people episode with a grain of salt, because these people can be people in your world that are your coworkers, your boss, your loved ones. They can be people in your world that are your greatest lover, your best friend. And they've learned to adapt to their world, to their situations, usually pretty early on, in a way that gets their needs met. And so I often, if you look in my emotional literacy course, one of the modules is all around behaviors. And I have you draw an iceberg. And if you've ever drawn an iceberg, you can see that the top of the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg, is just that 10% sticking out of the water. And that's behavior. And I always talk to people about all behavior has meaning. All behavior serves a purpose. And that purpose is often what's underneath that layer. The tip of the iceberg is just 10%, but the 90% that's laying underneath the surface is trauma, is unmet needs, feelings. And if we don't get to the underlying substance of what's underneath that, we are only seeing the 10%. We can push behavior down, like by cutting people out of our lives, by creating boundaries, by all kinds of things. We can push behavior down by consequencing or rewarding, right? Good behavior. But think about pushing an iceberg down. If you were like Hercules and you could push the iceberg down, what would happen to it? Eventually, that pressure would make it pop up somewhere else further in the water. It wouldn't actually stop or end the behavior. It would just push it to a different place. It's almost like a bubble in a waterbed. I'm totally dating myself right now. I totally get that. Yes, yes, our house did have a waterbed. My sister, I think, purchased a waterbed for herself. That was $450 back in the day. And yes, it was super fun to have a waterbed. But if you're familiar with waterbeds as a child of the 80s, you push that bubble down in the waterbed and it's popping up somewhere else, right? The bubble is always there. You can never get rid of all the air. That's what behavior is like. And so toxic people are expressing themselves. And when you can, at any point in time in your relationship with them, get to the underlying feeling or unmet needs or even childhood trauma or stories. A lot of times I talk about themes that we carry through our lives, the theme of abandonment, the theme of rejection, the theme of I'm unimportant, the theme of I'm not enough. When we can look at people in that way, it is a much more powerful thing than these labels. But that said, I'm going to be talking about labels so that you can center yourself in the reality of people behave sometimes pretty poorly. And these are the labels around a set of behaviors that they might have. And it will get you thinking of the people in your life so that you don't feel so alone or like a sense of, is it me or is it them? Like, what's happening here? And then at the end, we'll talk about a handful of tools that you can use to manage any kind of behavior that might be happening in your life. The first one that I'm going to be talking about is gaslighters. And this has been around for a very long time, but recently, I would say in the last 5 years, I've seen a ton of blogs and like different podcasts and different things on this particular set of like behaviors called gaslighting. And so I want to express that these are people in your life that make you question your own feelings and sense of reality. That if you just took a minute, you know, this person is telling you, if you just take a minute, you would realize your perception or your feelings about this situation is wrong. And so it causes you to second guess yourself. You might look back on a memory or a situation and you stop trusting yourself. And in long-term relationships with this person, you start feeling like something is wrong with you. I'm going to give you an example of each of these. So the example for a gaslighter is this. You get into a fight with a family member and they begin to tell you that it is wrong to feel bad about the situation or angry about the situation. And they convince you that you have some character flaw for feeling the way that you feel. And then you begin to start questioning yourself, your own sense of reality. And in these arguments, you start fighting over the details and like expressing yourself by gathering evidence that supports. You start feeling very defensive. But eventually, this gaslighter gets so amplified that you back down and you start second-guessing your own reality of the situation. And in some detrimental situations, you start believing that reality that the person is presenting you about who you are. The thing of it is if you got out of this situation or you got into a new relationship of some kind, all of a sudden those ways of making sense to you, and you start seeing with greater clarity because you're not so questioned about your reality and perceptions. That person, maybe in this new relationship, starts validating you in some way, and you're like, okay. So raise your hand out there if you have had experience with gaslighters. I know I have. I've had them in relationships. I've definitely had them at work, where I start to question my own like value and my own perception of like how the situation went down. And these are really hard, toxic people to be in relationship with. And we'll talk a little bit about the tools that you're going to use towards the end of our show today. The tools that I'm going to lay out work for any of these categories of toxic people. The next category of toxic people I want to talk about are black and white thinkers. And so I want you to think about black and white thinkers this way. And we all have this cognitive distortion. It's a pretty common cognitive distortion to have. If you're not familiar with what cognitive distortions are, go ahead and Google them. And what cognitive distortions really are is we all have a perception of our world. It gets filtered through our beliefs. And I cover this in my emotional literacy course for women, which I think is amazing. And you should all go onto my website and like purchase the course. It's really an incredible course. And we all have these thinkers in our world. And with black and white thinking, we've done this too. I do this. I have black and white thinking. And black and white thinking really is this. It's all this or it's all that. So there's a list of cognitive distortions. If you go ahead and Google them, there's about 10 of them that are the most common. And black and white thinking is one of them. When you're in relationship with a black and white thinker, the person in your life sees things as either this or that. They see that there's only one way, and it's usually their way to see the situation. And the conversation or communication is generally shut down until you finally can come to your senses and come to that particular space and place. An example would be you're in partnership with somebody and they're convinced that all cell phone use is bad. And I'm actually working with a client right now with this. And whenever you are around them, there's this expectation that you put it away. There is no negotiation because in their mind, all cell phone use is bad. So let's talk about that. The more modulated thinking is sometimes cell phone use is bad. Sometimes it's good and appropriate. And really what this person is trying to do is get their needs met of connection maybe or conversation, or maybe it's just been a trigger like a pet peeve of theirs. And they have a hard time modulating that pet peeve and like giving grace or like space for that pet peeve to like play out. And so you get into these entanglements with them that unless you shut it down, they're shutting you out. We're going to move on to, again, we'll cover at the end of our time, what are some ways that we can create boundaries and like communicate our needs within that. Moving on. The next one that we're going to talk about is triangulators. It's so interesting to me because this is such like an easy concept or a simple concept. I covered it like in psychology 101 when I was like working on family therapy dynamics. And it shows up a lot of times actually in step families. But this triangulation definitely shows up in most families. And it's people who create a triangle between you, them, and another. I want you to put your hands together in a triangle and picture that. At the top of the peak is the rescue role. At the lower left-hand triangle portion is the victim role. And then at the other end of the spectrum is the persecutor role. Triangulators are oftentimes the rescuers or the persecutors. And when it's the rescue role, they like to come in between you and the other person who are maybe playing and swapping back between roles of victim and persecutor. And they like to come in and be the hero of the story. They like to come in and save the day. And so they often will play their role to a T where they're going back and forth between you and you being the victim and you being the persecutor, and they're going back and forth between the two. This often happens in families, and it often happens where I'll talk a little bit about where one parent plays the rescue role and the other person is persecutor or victim. And just as easily, the persecutor can often become a triangulator and the victim can often become a triangulator. The persecutor becomes the triangulator by trying to get you to come in and side with them and side against the victim. When the victim is the triangulator, the victim is trying to get you to side with them and be an ally for them. And now we fall into the triangle and nobody feels heard, nobody feels validated, and nobody feels supported. And if you're pulled into a triangle for somebody, you often play your role to a T as well, and you're getting some of your needs met. When you get pulled into a triangle as the rescuer, good to rescue people. It feels good to communicate and be like the important person that's always bringing people together. It feels good to be like the holder of all of the information. And so think about that. What role are you playing in triangles in your life? The example I most often like to give is that this happens most often in families. And the example I'm going to share with you is a father rescues the conflict happening between his current wife, who's the stepmother of the kids, from maybe another relationship. The stepwife or the stepmom and the wife and the children maybe swap roles occasionally, becoming victim, persecutor, persecutor, victim. We never know who's at fault, who has it worse off. And the father, to get them to side, is coming into the triangle, trying to get them to side with them. In this situation, often everyone ends up feeling hurt and unsafe and unsupported. And so this is a bad situation in families to get in if you notice a piece of you. And it can happen at every age. It can happen at every stage. If you notice that this is happening to you, it is really getting out of those triangles, really truly listening to those people, setting boundaries for yourself and communicating with them to go directly to the person and not be pulling you in, right? So this is another form of toxicity in a relationship and toxic people. The next category we're going to talk about is boundary pushers. Boundaries are a super interesting thing, and they're so hard. I know throughout my life, I've always struggled to learn assertiveness and to understand what my boundaries are and to handle them. And oftentimes when I start boundary work, I can get really snippy and nasty because I can feel the person is pushing my boundary, and I don't know how to state it in any other way that's like acceptable. And so oftentimes when we're first starting to do boundary work and setting up boundaries with people, we can get pretty aggressive. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about what does assertive boundary setting look like. So boundaries are that interesting thing. First, you need to identify them, and they're usually based on feelings like, ooh, I'm starting to feel some resentment or like obligation or disrespectiveness coming up for me. And then you voice them and you ask for something different from the relationship. And the boundary pusher pushes. They repeatedly push your boundaries. They ask you to do something just this one time, and then you end up feeling like your voice isn't heard or it doesn't matter, or that you're asking too much by having that boundary in the first place, and you feel like you're not getting heard. And the message that's getting sent is, how dare you have boundaries? You're not a good person. You're not a good worker. You're not a good client. You're not a good partner if you have boundaries, right? So an example of this is, let's say you have a work contract, and you have let that client or the consultation client know that you don't return calls or work on the weekends. Yet every once in a while, that person calls and says, it's really urgent, and I'm only asking you to do this one time. And if you just address it this one time, I'll let you go, right? And so, so this is an example of a boundary pusher, somebody that's pushing your boundaries left and right, and only this one time, and it's only this urgency, and not good. So let's move on to the next one, which is actions not matching their words. This is a super interesting one because this person is really showing you repeated patterns, right? And patterns are a super interesting thing. This person is showing you a repeated of patterns in their behaviors that they're saying that they're a totally different person or they're totally another thing, right? And it reminds me of the quote, believe a person when they're showing themselves the first time. When someone is showing you like who they are, they're really showing you who they are the first time. Trust this more than the words that they might be saying. So an example is you're dating somebody and you've been told that they're a super healthy person. Yet you've watched them on many occasions drink too much, not work out, eat Cheetos for lunch. Believe them. They are not matching up with what their words are. And it doesn't mean end it, you don't have to be in a relationship. But I think pointing out the incongruency is super important in these relationships. And we'll talk about how to do that in a really compassionate and super loving place, right? All right, let's move on to the next one. This toxic person is the person that questions you. They're always challenging you, and they're asking you to, like, look at yourself in a different way. What this person is doing is sometimes creating doubt in you. And it's like getting unsolicited feedback. I'm a person who likes feedback, but not when it's unsolicited. I like it when it's dealt out with an invitation or when it's dealt out with a way to like move us to a higher level of understanding each other. I don't like it when unsolicited feedback is done to have you doubt yourself or to make yourself feel less important or to label you, right? And so an example of this would be without prompting, a collaborator begins to ask you leading questions about your service or your approach. Have you always done it this way? Wouldn't doing it this other way be more effective? So these are not really questions, right? I want you to hear this. Have you ever thought about changing this? They're leading questions. They're meant to let you doubt yourself. And I'm all in for collaboration and feedback, like I said, when invited. But having my work challenged to make it better is also good, right? But there's a way to do it that feels good and a way to ask a question that opens us up versus just shutting us down to doubt ourselves. So we'll talk a little bit about the tools again. The next set of toxic people are judgers. I try to stay away from folks like judgers. I really cut judgers out of my life. Not completely. I don't, you know, sometimes there are people that are in my family. I grew up with them, so I can't completely remove them from my life. But I really limit my place and space of like playing with them and being in relationship with them. These folks have generally black and white thinking, like we talked about earlier. And they don't have maybe confidence in themselves. When I ask people who are judgers if they judge others, I generally get the response of, oh, yeah, all the time. And generally that person is judging themselves the most. So this person is a person that shares critiques, maybe private information about other people and stories about others. And here's the thing. If they're sharing about others, they're probably sharing about yours too. And so the problem with judgers is you never feel great in their presence and you never feel like you can totally fully trust them. And you are often feeling guarded around your personal and private information. And guess what? You probably should. Unless you can set a boundary and they can change the course of their actions and change who they are in that relationship with you. The next set of people are people that dim you. This can be done either subtly or blatant. This person seeks to bring your light down, to dim your ideas, your joy, your confidence, your spark. It can be done in kind of a Debbie Downer way or in a negative tone. Or this person is kind of, this is the person to go to when you want like the worst case scenario laid out in your life. They can brag about themselves as another way to dim you down or your achievements. And I'm all about bragging. hello, I love a good brag of like tooting your own horn. But this person is doing it in a way that is one-upping you and clearly not supporting you. So there's lots of examples of how people can dim you in subtle or blatant ways. I think the biggest one I remember is I when I was dating younger in my early 20s, and I walked in to meet my partner at the time, one of his best friends. He was coming to visit from like Virginia or something and had his girlfriend with him. And I just remember walking in and there was this like subtle up and down look of what I was dressed as, who I was as a person. Dim number one happened right there and then. And then the next one was when I went to go shake her hand, she did not offer it. And I'm all about like do what limits you or like what you want, what touch you want, like informed consent. But it was done in such a way that immediately it was meant to kind of shrivel me. And then every time we brought up anything about our lives or what we were doing for work or anything, she would make a subtle, snide comment or blatant remark. It was the most awful, like, 20 to 30 minute experience. And we definitely left both looking at each other like, what the hell just happened? And that's a pretty blatant example. But dimming can happen very subtly. It can just be a remark or it can be an absence of something, a lack of something. It can be you put something out there and the person just ignores it, right? So dimming. The next example of compete with you. This is the person that is always in competition with you. And I want to express that this is not a very feminine way of being. Our femininity, often our society and being socialized as a woman, does pit one another against each other because it creates a sense of there's lack or there's not an abundance of resources. And that can create a lot of competition among women. But our natural flavor or our natural sense, our natural femininity is to be a collaborator and to trust that there's abundance out there for everybody, that there's enoughness for everybody. And when we can show up that way with each other as women, it really becomes a beautiful thing. I think you can see it best in my organization through my Authentic AF television that I have on YouTube. I really want the women that come on to that, or even the men, I'll be bringing men on, I really want them to feel that their light is being shined on them. I really want them to feel the abundance that is being shown for them. And I really want them to shine. And I think that's the truest sense of being feminine and in feminine relationships is that we collaborate. When we compete, we really dim each other's lights down. And we really buy in to the belief that's out there that there's not enough, that we're all competing for this like finite number of resources. And ladies, we're really not. We are all in the same soup together and we all have a divine right to be as prosperous, as abundant in relationships, and as connected to one another as we possibly can be. Labels, you know, I hate that word, but is the complainer. And the complainer is somebody that always has something negative to say, always has, you know, the glass is half full, always has a complaint. This is a person where you can be in a meeting, right? And you walk out feeling like, yeah, that was a really good meeting. And the complainer is all of a sudden pointing out all of these negative things that happened in the meeting that you maybe didn't feel or observe. Here's the thing about being around a complainer. They can really drag you into the pit of that complaint because emotions are contagious. They're like a virus. And so you might be walking out of that meeting feeling one way, but now all of a sudden the contagion has happened. The virus is in you and you start seeing things in more of a negative light. There really needs to be a buffer around this kind of person in your life because it can really drag you down and make yourself very, very toxic as well. The other one that I want to share with you is giving you unsolicited, the unsolicited advice giver, right? This is a person that often starts a sentence with, you really should, or have you thought? And a lot of times what happens is we just want to be heard. We just want to be validated. We want empathy. And what a person that's giving you unsolicited advice is doing is they're actually not empathizing with you. They're not validating, and they're fixers. And fixers are great when you ask for fixing, when you ask for advice. But when you are often in relationship with this person and they're giving you unsolicited advice over and over and over again, it feels really demeaning and diminishing. The next one, and we just have two more that I'm going to share with you today, is the assumer. And we can all be guilty of assumptions. It really takes effort and work to not be an assumer, right? I think the antidote for assuming is curiosity, if you can lead with curiosity, even in your longest-term relationship. So the assumer assumes things about you or creates stories based on little or no facts. It's often their own stories that they're weaving, and they just are making an assumption about you. And when this becomes toxic, it's a repeated pattern of behavior in your relationship that they're making an assumption about you. And they're creating stories, and they don't see you any differently. It's hard to be in relationship with this person because they never get curious with you. And we change and evolve over time. But in relationship with the assumer, we are constantly in this category, this box of who they think we are. And it's hard to break out of that box and be something different. The next one, and our last one, is people that are repeatedly jealous of us. Now, I talk about, and you can find in my blog on my website at www.hotpinkyou.com, my recent blog about the upside or the gifts of jealousy. And so jealousy in my life is really a powerful emotion that I turn into desire. So I create alchemy around the feeling of jealousy, because I'm like, I get curious with it and I turn it upside down and I'm like, ooh, what about what she is doing is something I desire. Maybe I don't desire her complete life or exactly what she's doing, but I desire like a piece of it for me. What would that piece look like, right? And with the person that's always jealous and they can't alchemize that into desire, it always feels like you have to dim yourself down. I've noticed this in the beginning stages of my work with clients, is that I would often, in my work with them, share a story about me that was kind of demeaning or like belittling of me or like made me more real, right? because I'd never wanted them to feel like a sense of inferiority with me. The problem became is like, you know, it also negated like my expertise. Like, hey, I have actually overcome some things in my life. Hey, I have actually knowledge that might be helpful to you because you've come to me as your coach or as your psychotherapist, and I can actually help you with this, right? And so this is an interesting set of experiences to have when a person is consistently jealous of you. Generally speaking, you need to confront the jealousy or get out of that relationship because it's just toxic for both of you. And it's just this round and round way of being in relationship with one another. I want to end our last 10 minutes together with some tools. I want to take a tool out of nonviolent crisis communication. And it's a 4-step process. I think I've shared this in other Blog Talk Radio programs episodes with you. But it's a 4-step process that you ask yourself and that you use to communicate, okay? So I'm going to share that. I'm going to share another 4-step question that you ask yourself, and then I'm also going to share a 4-step process that I've used in, and it's highlighted in a book that I love called Stop Walking on Eggshells. Now, this is taking your life back when someone you care about has borderline personality disorder. I recommend this book to a lot of my clients in psychotherapy, regardless of whether their loved one has personality disorder, because the back of the book, the second half of the book, really starts to talk about how to set boundaries and developing skills. It starts to talk about assertive communication with people, and it also starts talking about you know, just boundaries that you need to set up for yourself and safety planning. I love this book, even if you're not in relationship with borderline personality disorder people, because of these skills that it teaches us. So the first set of skills that I reference is out of nonviolent crisis communication. Compassionate communication is sometimes what it's referred to. And it's a four-step process of, it starts with I observe. The second step is I feel. The third step is I need. And the fourth step is I want. So write that down in your journal. I observe, I feel, I need, I want. Observation of a person's behavior, that tip of the iceberg, is super important, okay? Because you're not labeling. You're not saying, I'm observing you being gaslighting. What you're saying, because that's a label, right? What you're saying is, I observe that you are really questioning my perception about this situation. The next step, I feel invalidated. And this is an important step in the process because I feel is usually followed by one word. Anything more than one word is actually not a feeling. You're now creating a thought, which is different because that's your perception and opinion, and that's not what we're trying to get. I observe, I feel, without labels, opinions, or judgments. So I observe, you're questioning my reality. I feel invalidated. I need to be validated by you by repeating back what I just said. And I want us to have a better conversation around this topic, right? I gave you the four steps. I want you to practice them over the next week in every conversation you have, which is I observe, I feel, I need, I want. I'm able to do this because I've been doing it for over 10 years. That's a lot of practice. And when you're first learning a new skill, writing it down and practicing it religiously and consistently over the course of a week is super important. I do this all the time in therapy. When I learn a new skill on how to work with clients, I really repeat it with every client I'm working with over the next week so that I really solidify that skill. The next skill I wanted to share with you is a four-step question that you can ask yourself in situations where you're feeling like things are kind of getting out of control with communication. And a lot of times we react versus respond. And so this four-step process allows you to respond and not just react. React is, I'm feeling triggered by you, and so I'm going to explode or have intensity. Respond is, I'm feeling triggered by you, and I'm going to think through this so that I know what my next best step is, what my next best sentence is going to be to you. And so the four questions you ask yourself when you're feeling triggered is, what am I feeling now? And so it's finding the feeling. Am I angry? Am I frustrated? Am I sad? Am I jealous? Am I, whatever the feeling is, what am I feeling right now? And we don't ask ourselves that enough. The second question is, what is this person in front of me feeling, needing, or wanting? And it might take curiosity to ask them, what might their reality be? What might they be feeling, needing, or wanting? Is this person feeling abandoned by me? Is this person feeling unheard by me? Are they rejected? And remember, we're trying to get at the underlying belly of the iceberg, trauma, unmet needs, childhood themes, and inner child work, and feelings, right? Unmet needs and feelings. And then the third question to ask yourself is, why today and not like yesterday, or why right now and not 10 minutes ago? So what about the environment or the situation might be contributing to this issue at hand? Is this person, so when we're scanning the environment in order to respond best, when we're scanning the environment, we're looking at other stressors or impacts that might be happening in this person's life. Could be the weather. It could be the lack of, like, sleep last night. It could be, you know, the physical environment is feeling cluttered and, like, out of control, right? And so this is a really good question to ask ourselves. And we're asking ourselves this in our minds, but we can also be asking this of the other person in front of us if they're at a capacity to be hearing these. And the fourth question to ask ourselves in the situation is, how do I best respond? And here's the thing. That fourth question is then how you respond to the situation. But oftentimes we forget the first three. What am I feeling now? What is this person feeling, needing, or wanting? And how is the environment? And we just flip to number four. I'm asking you to slow the process down, to move out of reaction mode with people that are toxic and move more into this response mode. And I want to share with you the four-step process that's laid out in the book that I referenced, Stop Walking on Eggshells. I found this four-step process to be really, really good. And the first step is describe. The second step is express. The third step is assert. And the fourth step is reinforce. So this is around boundaries, where you're describing the situation without exaggerating, without judgment, and explaining maybe how you felt about the situation. So the other day in the car, when you were driving and you started getting angry, I was feeling kind of unsafe in that situation. And then you express your feelings and maybe even opinions about the situation. So it's very similar to the nonviolent crisis intervention when you're setting this boundary for yourself. And then you assert your limits. When I'm in the car with you, I want you to drive safely and suspend conversations that might get amplified, right? And then you have to, the fourth step is reinforce. And this is where a lot of people don't do well with boundary setting, is they say, that's it, I set the boundary and they're still not doing it. Boundary setting is up to us to set it, but also reinforce it. And so that person, even the healthiest person, might violate our set boundary. They might be in the car and be driving erratically again. And it's up to us to say, hey, remember, we had that agreement. And it's up to us to maybe even say the next time, I'm going to drive because I didn't feel comfortable the last time after I set a boundary and this happened again. Or you might say, let's drive separate. Like, you're setting and you're reinforcing that boundary consistently. Enjoy our life class today. I'm Christy Bemis, and I really enjoyed dropping in with you. And I hope that you learned something about some of the various toxic people in our life. Remember, it's not about not loving these toxic people. It's about finding a way to find compassion around who they are. And certainly, you might need to even make a decision in your life to completely cut a toxic person out of your life, because maybe you've set the boundary with them over and over and over again, or maybe you haven't reached your inner capacity or resources, or maybe you've just made a decision, I'm going to surround myself with other kinds of people in my life, and I'm not going to have this kind of a relationship anymore. And that's okay too. The important thing is to recognize, to understand that you're not crazy, that you're not making things up, that you're not like off in your perception, that there are toxic people in life and that they're out there just trying to get their needs met, but maybe they're not for you, right? Carolyn Miss has a great quote that I want to share with you. We evolve at the rate of the tribe we plug into. And I want you to try to plug into the tribe or those people in your life that fill you up and give you the best you that you can possibly be. Thanks so much for joining me today. Again, you can find me at www.hotpinkyou.com. Join my email list. I email about 2 times a week right now. And on every Friday, I email a really incredible newsletter that lays out 5 resources, offers, services, or people I love out there, or things I like to eat. And I think it's a super hot offering. So check those out. I'll see you soon. Dream big, and as always, live your life with a ton of passion. Be well.